You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
The I'll tell you what, I enjoy these interviews. And again, if you can imagine watching, you know, known Jocelyn and Monique since they were 15, since they were 7 or 8 years old. And again, you see them all over town. Saw them all over town. Saw them at track meet. Saw them at soccer tournament. Saw them at just your local rec league soccer. I can remember watching one of my kids. Might have been watching Patrick play on a field, and I knew they were playing on another field. I'd said hi to Pierre, and they were. One of the girls was doing a throw in from the side in a soccer game, and they did this thing where they would take, like, I don't know, a running start, and then they would do a somersault, and they'd put the ball in front of them, and then they would, which created momentum, and they would fling it over there. And I remember watching it. So I saw her, and I don't know how, just coincidentally saw one of Monique Jocelyn getting ready to do a throw-in, and I saw her watching him, and she backs up, and they do it. And you're just like, you got to be kidding me, man. So, yeah, you just see them around the community. You see them at report card night. You see them at turkey bingo night. You know, you see them, you know, at things for their brothers. Hey, what are you guys doing? Nothing. And, you know, they're just kids in your community. And to see them, I would tell you this, from a leadership perspective, the role that they took on last year in taking on USA Hockey in a gender equity fight was really cool to watch. Two young women that you know, watch their composure when USA Hockey's just letting them have it. And, you know, and now you're not going to participate in the World Cup of Hockey because you're trying to, you know, do what you believe is right for your sport, that the women's soccer team has done, but you have yet to do. And so is this the right time, all the second-guessing that must go on, and to see them on that stage doing those kind of things, very, very cool. So I love doing these kind of interviews. What's, I think, also interesting is the whole parenting piece of this. We're all parents, grandparents, and aunts, uncles, and, you know, I think we all impact at certain point, the young people in our families, whether you know it or not. And so I wanted to have Pierre on, their dad, to talk about, kind of facetiously, what it's like to raise Olympic hockey gold medalists. And that's never what it's been about. But it's interesting to hear his perspective as a father, but also as an athlete, watching his daughters, what it was like to watch them when they were young, when he knew they were special. And he points to the same tournament that Jocelyn spoke of. When they were 12, they went down and competed with girls that were in college. And you'll hear him talk about that. So Pierre's been a friend of mine since 1998. He's a great guy. He's a great guy. And he's a little bit gruff, though, and he's a little bit – he could be rough around the edges at times. He's a little bit direct, but he's a great friend of mine. And so without further ado, Jocelyn's dad, Monique's dad as well, and here on All Marine Radio on a Wednesday edition. I love this music. You know, this is awesome because I have known our next guest since I met him in 1990, the winter of 1997. I got a phone call, and he was putting together a team of players that had 1987-year birthdays, and I was living in San Diego. And so he was recruiting players, needed defensemen, and my oldest was a defenseman. And so up we went to Grand Forks, North Dakota, and I met Pierre Lamoureux. And you just heard his daughter, Jocelyn, and Pierre is the father of two gold medalists from the women's Olympic hockey team. And so we wanted, I wanted to have him on to talk about how to, what's the secret to raising Olympic gold medalists. So first of all, Pierre, congratulations. Your daughter's gold medalist in the 2018 Olympics for women's ice hockey, Jocelyn, setting an Olympic record with two goals in 6 seconds. Monique, the game tire against the Canadians in the third period, and Jocelyn, the shootout winner. So, holy smokes, man. How'd you do it?
No, couldn't have scripted it much better than that. Actually, I don't think we met in Grand Forks. I think we met at the Highlands Arena in Winnipeg the first time we met.
Where did, no, because I thought we trained in, where did we have trained before we went to Winnipeg?
Well,
in Grand Forks,
yeah,
at Eagles Arena.
Sure. I'm not sure I would have met you. I was usually out on the ice with the goalies.
Oh, you, so
and,
you think that you think that I was there and we didn't shake hands and we didn't meet? Yeah, that didn't
possible.
Happen. That didn't happen. Yeah, I know you think you're a tough guy, but that didn't happen. The so first of all, Pierre, we'll tell everybody a little bit about you. Born and raised where?
Fort Saskatchewan, Alberta.
Where is that?
Richard, right outside, about 20 miles northeast of Edmonton.
Okay, so for everybody, so Edmonton, a reference point. You grow up and, you play, obviously, you're a Canadian kid, so you play hockey and,
yep.
Your path, how do you wind up at the University of North Dakota?
Played my junior hockey at St. Albert, which is a suburb of Edmonton, I guess. And, for the St. Albert Saints and, tier two, level, so that would be just under the tier one level. If you play tier one, you're ineligible for college. I wanted to go to college, so I did not make that jump. Recruited by the University of North Dakota as a, I guess you'd call a recruited walk-on, which means no money. So at least not right away anyway. So. But went down there, still had to make the team. I mean, there's no guarantee I was going to make the team, and fortunately, I did. The goaltenders that year were Mel Donnelly, Bob Iwabuchi, who was the, I think, All-American the year before, and then Darren Jensen, who was a highly recruited goaltender. I locked onto that fourth spot. I played one game my first year. It was the last game of the regular season after we had secured the top spot in the league. So finally let me play.
So you play...
But anyway, that's how I got here.
Okay, so you played for 4 years. And for those of you who don't know anything about college hockey, the University of North Dakota is one of the storied Division I college hockey programs in the country. And they have a tradition, like few colleges do. They have a certain style that they play. Pierre, talk about the style that the University of North Dakota plays.
I guess you could say we probably played a very physical style. We had some very, gifted top-end guys. You know, when I was there, it was guys like Mark Taylor and Doug Smale, Phil Sykes, just to name a few, Troy Murray, and I'm sure I'm going to forget some others, but we had some high-end skill, but our teams were always really tough, very physical. So just a really tough team to play against.
All right, so you get done with college, you marry Linda, who's a swimmer, and So you're a
swinger or swimmer?
No, swimmer, for God's sake. What the hell? So when your kids are growing up and you're raising your kids, what role are athletics going to play in the lives of your kids?
Linda and I introduced the kids to all kinds of activities. It wasn't really that important that they played hockey. I'm glad that they did. I mean, I love the sport, but we had them in all kinds of stuff. And, I mean, heck, for all I care, they could have played music or been in the arts, it didn't really matter. As long as that they had something that they were passionate about and something that they could look forward to every day. To me, it was a way to kind of keep them out of trouble, and as a parent, you can kind of hold that over their head if they misbehave. But, you know, because if you take away something the kids love to do, they tend to listen a little bit better. But I'm kind of joking, but there's a little bit of truth to that.
No, there's a lot of truth to it. Don't you? He's not joking. The So you don't, as a college athlete, your wife a college athlete, you don't have an agenda other than your kids are going to probably learn a lot of the same lessons that you learned playing sports growing up, right?
Right. I mean, we wanted them to do something active. You know, we didn't want them, you know, watching TV, and at the time they didn't have, you know, cell phones. It seems like these days everybody's got their nose in a cell phone, and,
right,
you know, nobody talks to each other, or they're playing video games, and I don't like that. I mean, I don't think it helps kids grow up and mature and learn how to work in a group. So for us, you know, sports was really important.
All right, so let's talk about that. Your oldest, Phil, pretty talented goaltender, following in his dad's footsteps. Phil's a goaltender. Your next son, Jacques, he winds up going to the Air Force Academy, is a final for the Hobie Baker Award, one of the finalists for the Hobie Baker Award, which is the highest.
Silk was, too.
What's that?
I'm not sure if you knew that. I said Silk was, too.
They're
never
that's
in the
right.
top three, but they were in the top. I mean, I don't know how they determine, you know, if you finish 10th or if you finish 4th or whatever. I know they weren't in the top three. The only one that was in the top three was Jocelyn, but you know, Monique was in there too. I think her first year at Minnesota. I think, I'm not sure. I think she was.
But that's the kind of, so as your older boys kind of go through and get into college, does it change the way you look at hockey? And from the time that I saw your two girls played, and they are the two youngest in the family, they were exceptional. They were exceptional players. And not just they were exceptional girl players, they were exceptional boy players from the time, and I think I've known them since they were 7. So talk about, so the girls were just going to be the same as the boys, and nothing really changes in terms of the way you see athletics as your kids now are range from college to probably, you know, middle school at that point.
Well, I guess as a parent, you try and help your kids decide, you know, to pick a, let's say hockey, for instance, try and pick a position that will serve them well long term. And what I meant by that is, I guess, you take a look at Phillip. I mean, Phillip is, what, 5'9"? He's not very big. I mean, goaltenders in the NHL are, heck, if you're not over 6 feet, they're not even looking at you. I mean, there's only a couple of goaltenders in the NHL that are, I think, 6 feet. Everyone else is, they're huge. And so, you know, that's not going to happen. But because of his small stature, that's really the only position he can probably excel at. He's too small for defense. He's too, you know, small for a forward. But that was a position he had an act for, and kind of we started him out in that. But he played out too. I mean, it wasn't like we just put him in goal and then left him there. I mean, there's a lot of teams where if he wasn't playing goal, he was playing forward. So,
right.
You know, and I think that probably helps. You know, athletes that play multiple sports, you know, I think it makes them a better athlete in their chosen sport.
Were you afraid once your kids decided that they wanted to play competitive sports? Because ice hockey, you know, there's a couple tracks in a community. You can play in rec leagues as a kid and just go out there for fun, or you can play for competitive teams, and, you know, parents spend a majority of time and traveling from city to city on the weekends, the weeknights, practices and whatnot, if you want to be a competitive player. Did you change emphasis when your kid said, no, I want to play competitive, I want to play travel hockey, as it's known? Did that change the emphasis in your house? Because it certainly did in my house. I mean, I don't know that I'm a model parent, but if you wanted us to contribute more to me, then there was going to be more asked of you. This is not a casual commitment where you can, if you were going to spend thousands of dollars throughout the course of the winter from hotel rooms and gas and whatever else you wind up paying for, to me, it changed the commitment that your kid had to show you to earn that. Did that factor into the way that the emphasis you put on or what you expected from your kids?
I don't think so. I think, you know, they all started off in house league.
Right.
And they would compete in that and have fun. I mean, the girls and Patrick, they were all the same team. They would just... compete at that level, and if they were, dominant at that level, you go to the next level, and then someone's asking you to try out for a traveling team, and I don't think there was ever any pressure to force them to play at the next level. They played there because they wanted to, and they're competitive. Our household, just by nature, is competitive, and I guess that's partly because we had six kids in 5 years, and that was just the nature of the game. They were always competing with each other. It didn't matter what it was. And so I think that just came naturally.
Okay.
There was nothing I had to force on them. They just wanted to do it.
What about, let's talk about the girls. Your girls always played boys hockey. They never played girls hockey until they went to high school.
Bear in mind, there was no girls hockey, Mike.
Oh, that's right.
That's the only place they could play.
So I'm thankful for that. The Grand Forks program where our kids grew up, there's a girls program there now called the Knight Riders, right? And is there another? Is the youth program called the Angels? Because the high school program's a Knight Rider.
I can't remember what they're called, but there's like a U12, and there's other younger groups. So
but that didn't
girls hockey now.
That didn't exist when Monique and Jocelyn were starting out. I'd forgotten about
that. That's correct.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So talk about you watch your daughters play, and again, as I said, my son Patrick played on the same teams, and they were not just the best girl players; they were two of the best players on the team. And they were that way from when they were mites to squirts to peewees. Talk about watching your girls progress. Certainly as a dad, as hockey gets more physical, you had to be concerned, or were you? Because, your daughters are pretty tough girls.
Yeah, so, growing up, I went to checking started in, second year peewees? First year peewees, I can't remember, to be honest.
Yeah, first year
peewees. But first year peewees. And, they were, I think, reasonably dominant up to that point. And there were always the people that would say, oh, wait till they start checking. And then that's, that'll be the end of them. And they loved it. They just, when it came to checking, it was like, all right, now we can hit. Let me tell you,
we went all over the state, and Monique and Jocelyn were hated, right? I think, look, if they ever throw a party for them in Fargo, there's going to be so many people spitting teeth because they hated those girls. In Fargo, North Dakota, they would be
just the players, but I think a lot of
the parents
didn't like them either.
Would be going crazy, and So high school comes, and so about this time, when do you know that your girls are special? Because clearly they're the most gifted girls that I had seen play growing up. But, you're a dad, and you I'm sure that you began looking, at where are the girls going to play, because they're pretty talented young women. how did you do that? Because as you said, the opportunities weren't everywhere for girls. 10, you know, hell, we're talking about, they're 28 now. We're talking about 16 years ago. Good God. That sounds crazy.
Yeah.
But 16 years ago, the opportunities weren't the same. So how did you approach that in terms of, where will this talent take them? Because they're exceptional.
Yeah. So a couple things there. In regards to the checking, these are conversations that Linda and I had amongst ourselves, not with the girls. In getting to Bantam. So, you know, you get second-year Bantams, the boys are hitting puberty, you know, they're starting to put on some weight, and they're getting a fair bit bigger. And the fact that the girls are playing with the boys don't like that so much.
Right.
And especially if the girls are, you know, pretty good. So just the fact that they're girls, they got a bit of a target on their back. So they're very aware of that. Those are discussions I did have with the girls about always keeping your head up and always looking around because, you know, you're going to get run just for the heck of it. So, you got to be aware. And you just can't be a receiver. You got to be a giver too. You can't, just take hits, but you got to be able to dish them out. So we practiced that and taught them how to receive a check, how to deliver a check, and when to do it, when not to do it, and things like that. So that's one thing. So we knew that there was a time that they were going to have to move over to a girls program, just because the size difference was getting larger. And to what end do you continue to play boys? I know that Bob Dillon, who was, I think, one of the directors of the hockey program in Grand Forks at the time, had told us that they will not be allowed to play boys high school hockey. So, I mean, they never got to that point because they had left in ninth grade, so it was never an issue. That being said, that's when Shattuck St. Mary's had talked to us, the coach and Corey Stafford at the time, and had recruited the girls. But previous to that, to answer your question about when did I know that I had an inkling that they were going to be pretty good, was probably a tournament that they went down to Minneapolis for. It was Jenny Potter's father that had called and asked them if they would come play in that tournament. And now this was a tournament with college, with high school, college, some ex-Olympians, and they went and played in it. And they did.
And how old did, how old were they?
Pretty good.
How old were they at the time?
Well, seventh graders, I don't know, what is that, 12 years old? And they're playing with girls that are, you know, young women, a fair bit older than they are. And they held their own. They were not dominant by any means, but they more than held their own. They were very, every bit as physical as anybody else out there, which was good to see. They would get some goals here and there, but like I said, not dominant, but more than held their own against players that were way older. So I think it was at that point that they thought, yeah, I think they can play divisional hockey and probably be pretty good at it.
All right, so let's fast forward. So the girls, they go to Shattuck St. Mary is legendary for their hockey, and so the girls go there and they continue to write a little bit of history, and then they're recruited by the top hockey school in the country. Yes, the University of Minnesota for women.
Correct. So, well, one of the top. I mean, there were others too, but Minnesota was definitely up there.
Right. So that they go to the University of Minnesota, and then they spend what, a year there, and then they play on the national team, and they go to their first Olympics after that, and then they transfer to Pierre's alma mater, the University of North Dakota, and they finish their career at the University of North Dakota. Talk about the whole Olympic thing when the national team. You're watching them play in college, and you're watching them play arguably in American college hockey, a lot of the best women in the world. how does the whole national team thing happen, and what were your thoughts as watching as a dad and a former hockey player? Because I know you evaluate, you're pretty honest with your kids. Tell us about that.
Let's back up to the University of Minnesota. They go there, they have a very good year. They don't win a national championship, personally they did extremely well. So the following year is 2010, because of the successful year that they personally had, they were selected to try out for the national team. But that creates a bit of a problem because they're going to they transfer at the end, which means they also have to sit out a year. But what they decided to do was take, while they were doing their residency, so their residency, the girls all get together, just like they did this year. They got together in, I think, August, and then they're playing together right up to the Olympics. So they did the same thing in Vancouver. But while they were doing that, they were taking online classes, so they would not have to sit out that year when they came to the University of North Dakota. So not only were they training for the Olympics, but, you know, they were taking a full scheduled classes. So, that being said, they were pretty focused girls, able to carry a lot on their plate. And the reason they came to the University of North Dakota is they never do anything easy. They wanted to build something. And they thought this was a good opportunity to come to the University of North Dakota because things were starting to look up a little bit. They had a new coach. They had a much better year than the previous year. And said, well, let's go back and try and build a women's program. And I think that's why when President Kennedy dropped the women's program, it was just such a hard blow. They were put so much into trying to develop that program that just to have it yanked out from under them was pretty disappointing.
Yeah, for those of you who aren't familiar with women's college hockey, the University of North Dakota dropped their women's Division I college hockey a year ago, almost a year ago, about this time, and it was stunning for the community. It had been something that that they had stood up from an embryonic program. You had two of the best players in the nation, Monique and Jocelyn, transfer back, playing in their hometown, and they were on track to have more Olympic hockey players come out of that program than any other school in the nation, and the president of the university, in a budgetary move, decided to end the program about a year ago. And so, I want to talk to you about raising Olympians, because, you know, now when you look at young kids, and I kind of tease Pierre used to get grief for being hard on his kids, you know, and which is fine with me because I was just as hard on my kids, but nobody noticed because Pierre was always in trouble for being hard on his kids. And he's a little bit more gruff than I'm, a little more jovial than Pierre. Pierre's a little bit more quiet and stern looking. So they're like, oh, McNamara, he's a nice guy. And I'm screaming at my kid. I told a story yesterday about Patrick hanging a curveball in a rec league baseball game and me yelling at him for three blocks until Susan looked at me and said, really? I said, well, come on, life is tough. It's tougher when you're stupid. So,
I got to tell you something real quick. After the Olympics, you know, I had watched the replay of the game on TV, and I saw myself on the TV afterwards, and I thought to myself, holy crap, I look grumpy. I said that all the time.
See? He's intimidating.
As well.
He's intimidating. So
I'm really not bumpy.
Yeah, he is. Don't believe him. He is. when people ask you about, because now kids play sports, and then there's an off-season program, off-season conditioning program, And, you know, they play a sport a year, for almost a year round, a lot of them. I'm curious about your thoughts on that. You've seen your daughters perform at very, very elite levels. You've seen the level of fitness that your daughters maintain. Give advice to parents. And the first thing I want to ask you is, what advice do you give to parents whose kids haven't even gone through puberty yet, male or female? I mean, you don't even know what you're going to be until after puberty. So what advice do you give parents when their kids are just young and haven't gone through puberty?
Well, I don't know if it matters whether you've gone through puberty or not.
I remember talking to the kids
regarding whatever the chosen sport was, and in this case it was hockey. I said, you know, if you want to get better, you're going to have to do more than the average guy. I mean, you can go to your two or three practices a week and work really hard to practice, and maybe you just have natural talent and you're going to be, you know, better than everybody else. But you're, you know, you might be a big fish in a small pond, okay, you know, in the Grand Forks, North Dakota area. When you get out of that pond, you're going to find out there's a lot of really good players around. And you're going to have to go the extra mile to, if you want to get better. And there's the possibility of scholarships and things like that. People will pay for you to go play, you know, hockey somewhere. And you're going to have to do, you know, extra stuff. So, you know, that's where the shooting tarp comes in and the stick handling drills that they would do, you know, in the driveway or what have you, and exercises and things like that. Just stuff on their own. I didn't make them do it. I just, you know, said, look, if you want to do this, here's some of the stuff, you know, you're going to need to do. I'm not going to make you do it. But they just kind of took naturally to it. And everybody, and I think it helped that the older kids, you know, did it too, and all the younger ones just followed. And it was like, okay, this is what we do. And they all worked really hard at it. You know, away from the rink and you know, when you had your normal practices. And I think that went a long way to helping them, you know, be a little bit better.
All right. Your daughters are elite level athletes. There's a lot of, and you and I have both seen it, there's a lot of, you know, kids that are above average athletes who go through a lot of grief with their parents. You know, trying to be the little engine that could, and the little engine that could really couldn't. The little engine tried really hard, but the truth is, to play at elite levels, you have to have a very, very high level of talent. And I think I mentioned to Jocelyn about this, but, you know, I remember when I saw the cards on the writing on the wall for me as a baseball player, I remember asking my dad, hey, who's right, Pete Rose or Ted Williams? Pete Rose says good hitters are made, not born. And Ted Williams said good hitters are born, not made. And he looked at me and he said, Pete Rose is full of shit. He's selling books, man. He said, he tries to sell that he's not real talented and, you know, he does it all on hustle. Look, he's an incredibly talented guy. So the truth is, you got to have enough talent to be in that pool, and then it's the hard workers after that, that those right. people are the ones that rise to the top. Talk about watching that, because I'm sure, you know, having daughters that are, you know, now Olympic. I'll tell you what, I can never say that often enough, Olympic gold medalist, Monika Jocelyn Lammerer, because it's 20 years in the making. That whole thing is 20 years in the making of fun, but a lot of work, a lot of hard work, a lot of work, a lot of time away from your family, a lot of time away from what other kids did. But I think the average family is going to deal with a kid that wants to be something and is trying hard. Do you have any advice to give for families whose kids aren't elite athletes? How do you coach them? How do you nurture them so that they still get the same great lessons out of sports that, you know, that kids who go to elite levels get?
Well, I think one thing, Mike, is you can't force them to do something they don't want to do. They have to want to do it. They got to love it. And if you love it, you will put in the time and the effort to make yourself better. I think, unfortunately, sometimes we see parents that want it more than their kids want it. And that's never a good recipe. It's a recipe for disaster. Mm-hmm. I would watch the kids play, of course, and try to, I'm always critiquing, I guess, you know, even now. It's got to the point where the girls look at me asking, okay, Dad, go ahead, say what you got to say. You know, they don't listen anyway.
So it doesn't stop now that they're playing at the highest level that women play at?
It never stops.
It never stops? They're still?
No, not so.
Well, no, that's not what they told me. They said, no, he still has
to have
his time.
Oh, yeah, what did they say?
They say, oh, no, he still has to have his time. We still have to talk about how we played. And I said, really? And I said, they told me that in January. They said, oh, yeah, we have to talk to, you know, we'll come out, we'll talk to my mom and dad, and then we talk to my dad about the game, and he'll tell us what he thought.
I'll say one thing about, you know, parents critiquing their kids is, I'd always try and you know, throw some compliments in there first. You know, like, hey, wow, you really did this well, and you forechecked great, and then it comes, you know, but, you know, just trying to soften the blow. But I guess if you're negative all the time, that's never good. But I would always try and, you know, highlight the positive, but, hey, there's always things you can work on.
Right.
I mean, it's just, that never goes away.
Right. But for every Monique and Jocelyn Lamoureux, there's dozens of kids along the way that at some level get told that they're not good enough. And so I guess I'm looking for words of wisdom for those. I mean, if you're a parent, you can kind of see in tryouts and things like that where your kid kind of racks and stacks, and you ought to, you know, be prudent enough to kind of take a step back and take a breath and say, and in your own mind, as much as, you know, you might want them to be successful and your heart breaks when their heart breaks, but be there to help them prepare them mentally, or be there, because that's not easy when you fail on at higher stages. I don't mean the Olympic stage necessarily, getting cut from that team, which must be devastating when you're one of the last cuts and you've spent much of your life preparing for that. But any words of advice is, you've had sons that have played at every, you know, in major junior and in Canada, in college hockey. They play professional hockey. Is there any secret that you would give parents in terms of being a supportive parent?
Well, you know, the only kids, I mean, the girls have, I guess, attained the highest level that you can have. That's their Stanley Cup. So, I mean, for them, that's as high as they can go. The other kids, you know, they're trying to climb the ladder. I mean, Philip played in the AHL for a couple of years for a couple of different teams, as a backup goaltender. And I think kind of saw the writing on the wall and, you know, said, you know, maybe I need to get over to Europe and play over there, because, you know, I can make more money there and I can still play and I can log a lot of games. And, you know, some of it's kind of, you know, you got to be a star where you are. And maybe it's not a star in the NHL. Maybe it's not a star in the high school team or the junior team, but everyone's going to get to a certain level where they get to a point where they start to level off.
Right.
And so I know Jacques came to that point after college and he dabbled in the ECHA a little bit, and he had a hard time letting go. But, you know, we talked a lot about, you know, where he wanted to play next and stuff like that. And I said, you know what? I think the writing's on the wall, and if coaches aren't asking you to be on their teams, or you're not getting, I don't want to say drafted, but in the East Coast League, you know, various coaches pick players up and things like that. If you're not getting picked up and signed to these contracts, and they don't make much money.
Right.
you know, maybe the writing's on the wall. And maybe it's time to look at other things. I mean, you're going to make a lot more money doing what you're doing than you know, playing in the East Coast League. So, I mean, for me, I saw the writing on the wall my last year of college. I didn't play very many games, and I wasn't about to start running around the East Coast League, you know, for, you know, $18,000-$20,000 a year. I said, well, you know, got to start life. I'd rather start it sooner than later and, you know, waste 10 years running around, you know, the minor leagues. So
what's it like?
And had a bunch of kids.
What's it like around other parents of other elite players? Because they've all traveled a similar road that you have. Is it the same as any other team? Some are really good, some are really bad, most are in the middle. Is it the same, or is it different when you get to, you know, that kind of level?
Geez, that's a great question, Mike. I've never been one to do a lot of socializing, I guess.
That's true. This is not a surprise.
I don't know. That's a tough question for me to answer. I guess I tend to be, I hate to say I'm a loner, but you might be a loner.
He is. You know what? I forgot who I was interviewing. That was a stupid question. We're talking to the father of,
let me clarify that. I mean, it's not like I don't talk to anybody, but I'm not hanging around.
Don't try to dress up loner. He's going to watch the game. He's going to be very quiet. Right? You might have a friend or two, another loner that he hangs out with. I was that guy on many occasions. And we'd stand there or sit there and mostly stand and watch the game. And so I forgot who I was talking to, Pierre. Don't worry about it. I gotta tell you
a funny story.
Well, hold on one
second.
He is the father of Olympic gold medalists, Monique and Jocelyn Lamoureux. Twins, sisters who played on the women's U.S. Olympic hockey team, and we'll talk about this in a second, but, in the final game, Monique in the third period, scored, the tying goal to tie the Canadians and then send it into overtime, and Jocelyn, scored the game winner with her Britney Spears, oops, I did it again goal, in an overtime shootout. So, go ahead with your story. So Pierre's been gracious enough to give up a little bit of his time. You heard from Jocelyn earlier today. So I thought you, a lot of parents, you know, a lot of people listen, have kids, their kids play sports, and you don't often get a chance to hear from a parent of an elite-level athlete about what it's like and how you do it. So I wanted to have Pierre on and talk about it. So, all right, so with that said, go ahead and your story.
So we're getting ready for the gold medal game. When I say we, I mean there was Linda, myself, my sister and her husband, and Jocelyn's husband, Brent, and Nick's husband, Anthony. And we're all staying at this Airbnb in South Korea. So we're all getting ready to go to the gold medal game. And obviously, I try not to be a superstitious guy, mm-hmm. although there are a few things. And, we had brought a couple of jerseys. Now, I don't wear jerseys. I've never worn my kids' jersey. I don't got nothing against parents that do. It's just not Linda and me. We just don't do it.
It's weird. Come on. We both know it. Come on.
It's just not for me. So anyway, obviously things didn't go so well in Vancouver and things didn't go so well in Sochi, and I didn't wear any of those jerseys, but I brought a jersey along, and I thought to myself, I'm going to wear this thing. Maybe it'll change the luck here. Can't hurt anything. So I put this jersey on, and Anthony looks at me, he looks at me like, what an idiot. You know, he says, hey, Pierre, he says, they're not going to win because you're wearing that jersey. They're going to win because they're the most prepared. So off comes the jersey, throw it back in the suitcase, and off we go. But that's not it. So Anthony, he's not a superstitious guy, right? They're going to win because they're the most prepared. So when we were at World Championships in Kamloops, British Columbia. Anthony was at that game, and for whatever reason, we ended up standing beside each other at that game. And I don't chew gum, but for whatever reason, I had a stick of gum in that night. And we stood on the top row and just kind of watched side by side. I don't even talk to the guy. We just stand side by side, and we don't discuss the game at all. And that's the way it goes. So they ended up winning that game in overtime. So the next World Championships was in Michigan, and we ended up top row, standing beside each other, and had a stick of gum, and they won that game in overtime. So I think in South Korea, well, there we are again. We're standing beside each other, each chewing a stick of gum, and try chewing a stick of gum for four periods. And holy smokes, it gets a little hard. We're standing there, and we're at the top row, and there's the handicapped seating right in front of us, but there's nobody sitting there. So we're not sitting in the seats, but we're standing right behind the seat. And if you get in South Korea, if you're too low to the glass, it's not a very good seat. You're looking through too many stanchions. You're looking through the player's box, which is extra glass and all that kind of stuff. Right. Anyone that's been at a hockey game knows exactly what I'm talking about. And so my sister and her husband are down lower, so they can't see very well. So she comes up, and she asks if she can sit in that seat right in front of us that nobody was sitting in, which was a handicapped seat. And with Anthony and I never even looked at each other, and as soon as she asked, we both said, no, can't. And that was it. And she looked at us like, holy crap, and turned around and walked away. That was my sister. And so I guess maybe Anthony is a little superstitious, but
maybe
at least in that part. I thought it was kind of funny.
So
I looked at him and said, I tell you, you're superstitious. He said, well, that's where I draw the line.
Oh, yeah, there you go. So it's only his line that counts. The Canadian said, really had had their way with the American, the U.S. Olympic team. Throughout the series that they played prior to the Olympics. So you're going into the gold medal game. What were your thoughts? This is your daughter's third Olympic Games. All the hard work that goes into it. What were your thoughts before the game?
Not feeling overly confident, I'll say that. I mean, we hadn't won in what? The last five outings. Granted, the round robin game, we had played very well. We lost 2-1, almost doubled them in shots,
right,
but still lost. And so, but the good thing is we played well. And so you take that with you. I mean, the round robin game isn't the, you know, it's for Canada and the U.S., it's more of a home ice advantage thing. So, that being said, you know, you're hoping they play well. And but, yeah, Canada had their way with us, you know, five games leading into that. And I don't know why. I think the coach was trying to have them play like the Russians used to play back in the 80s when teams didn't have systems and didn't know how to defend that. I think our team was struggling with that a little bit. They would regroup, and they would enter the zone.
The Canadians looked like they would sag, you know, and clog the middle, and there was it seemed like there was a lot of perimeter play, except for Monique and Jocelyn's line, who seemed to have a lot of success throwing it to the net, which is what you see in the Stanley Cup playoffs right now. Throw it to the net and go fight it out in front of the net. And so let's talk about Monique scores. Canadians are up 2-1 with what, about 6-7 minutes left in the third period, and Monique gets a breakaway on a 2-on-1 in the U.S. end, and then a bad line change.
Right.
And then, you know,
yep.
A stretch pass, and Monique's in. Were you watching? Were you thinking? What were your thoughts when?
I was watching. Canada had a 2-on-1, and they shot far side. I'm not sure if our goaltender got a piece of it or not. It was kind of hard to tell on the replay. and that basically kind of rung around the boards. Canada more or less turned around and went for a line change, but the puck came all the way out to our box, and Monique headed for the far blue line. And that pass almost, there was a Canadian player, it went, I think, right under or through her feet or under her stick or something. I mean, it went right past her. And, the pass was right on Monique's tape, and she went in on a breakaway, and, yeah, she scored when it mattered the most.
All right, so here's that audio, Monique's goal.
She has Nurse on her left. Long pass ahead to Monique Lavrou. Moving in on Zobanos. She scores!
Big missed opportunity for Canada on that 2-on-1. Great play by Falzer to take the pass away. Eyes up, looking across. Falzer comes over, misses the net. That creates this huge opportunity for Monique Lamoureux. Great eyes up, looking in. Low glove side. I said stay away from the glove, but keeps it low enough right here. Buries it.
All right, so we see a play like that. That plays, what, 20 years in the making, Pierre. To do it at speed, to do it at the highest level, that puck hits the back of the net. What'd you think?
Well, under pressure, too.
Yeah,
I mean, that was
a little bit.
I mean, definitely a big momentum, jump for the U.S. We had been pressuring, but not scoring. And to get that goal at that point of the game was, well, obviously key. You just, as a dad, you want your daughters to have those opportunities in those key times and be able to deliver the goods. And, I'm pretty happy for them.
Yeah, I can imagine. So, let me just tell you, I could listen to that and I could say gold medal winning. Every time I say it, I start smiling like a dope. So now they go into the overtime shootout. You've seen your daughters play for years, and so Jocelyn gets picked to go what, sixth in the shootout?
I mean, yeah.
They go five, right? And is what they do, and then they send Jocelyn out. Any thoughts? Did you switch your gum? Did you spit it out? Did you hold hands with Anthony? Did you hold hands with Anthony? What did you do anything, or would you just stand
still
there?
I never even talked to him after many scores. So, just kind of watching. I was surprised that she wasn't asked to go in the first five. I was a little surprised at some of the picks, but you know what? I'm not at practice,
right?
And I don't see what they do in practice. And maybe there are certain players that.
Well, Pierre, let me tell you, Pierre McGuire was throwing a fit. I don't know if you heard him, but holy smokes, man, he was fit to be tied in the things that he said. Like, why haven't either, of Monique or the two of the top goal scorers for the women's team? Why haven't they shot in this thing? Which I think a lot of people were. But so Jocelyn steps out there. Had you seen this move
nope.
She made? Because she almost melted Twitter with that move.
You know what? I've never seen it, Link. And I didn't know that she was practicing, but I don't know what they're doing half the time. I mean, that's their deal. So, but no, I had never seen it. I was kind of curious to what she might do. I knew that I always tell the kids when on a breakaway, and it sounds funny. Well, it sounds stupid, actually, but I just sell the sizzle. You got to make the goaltender think you're going to do something that you're not. And so the easiest thing to do is just give a good hard fake on a shot. Just freeze them. I'll say one thing. Amanda Kessel doesn't get enough credit for the goal that she scored. But she came in and just did a little shimmy, just enough to make a goaltender just freeze for a second, and then just roofed it. I mean, she made it look so easy. And unfortunately, I think her goal, she gets a little bit overshadowed by what Jocelyn did, because Jocelyn's ended up being the game winner, and Amanda's was more to tie it up. Right. So that's kind of unfortunate. But, you know, her goal was, she was probably under more pressure. And if Jocelyn doesn't score, you know, then we're still
in it.
You know, it's we're still in there.
Right.
So
All right. So let's listen. Let's listen to Jocelyn's goal, and you can give us your thoughts.
We go round by round. Jocelyn Lamoureux, two goals apiece in the shootout. Lamoureux moving in on Jabanas. She deeps and scores. Oh my gosh. That's electrifying. That's as good as you're going to see anywhere.
Great move, great hands, great deception, finding the hole right there. We saw her take a shootout earlier in this tournament, unable to capitalize. Makes it count.
Okay, Pierre, that was straight up sick, okay?
I'll have to admit, Mike, I've watched that a few times.
That I would imagine you could have that loop and never get tired of watching it. But wow, that, I'm talking about selling the sizzle. She sold the sizzle. She sold the steak. She sold the pan. She sold everything on that one. You know, and then you saw Twitter exploding. You see guys like TJ Oshie and guys playing in the NHL going, "What the hell was that?" So 20 years in the making, right? They stopped the last Canadian shot, which it didn't, I mean, it was I hate to say it, but it was a weak shot. I don't know if the, you know, I didn't know who the shooter was.
Well, she was trying to get Maddie Rooney to kind of open up, and then she was going to try and five full, but, Maddie was having none of it.
Yeah, none of it.
Kept her stick down there, and she made the save look pretty easy.
Yeah, pretty easy. So, as a parent, what'd you think at that point? 20 years, you're watching your daughter's work and their third Olympics. All of a sudden, now they're gold medalists.
Well, I'll back up to Jocelyn's goal. When I saw her make the move, I mean, the first thing I thought of was, well, that was something special, because she really, I mean. And I'll say one other thing. When we got to the shootout and the game went to the shooter, I kind of thought we were maybe at a disadvantage. Shannon Zabados is, you know, the top goaltender in the world. And if she's not the top, she's right up there. And, I just thought maybe we were going to be a disadvantage there. But I also think that Gigi Marvin's goal shook her. I thought when Gigi came in and she kind of mishandled it and then kind of fell and then took a second shot, but kind of regrouped, I guess, and still got a stick on it and it scored. I think that might have shook the Beatles. And, but who knows? It's, she usually to give up. You know, three goals on six shots. That's not like her. That's for sure. So
the so what do you guys do as a family? First of all, I got a chance to see some of the pictures you guys took, but all of a sudden your girls are Olympic gold medalists. What has that been like?
Well, it's I've hardly seen them, to be honest. I mean, you're very proud.
Right.
You know how hard that they've worked. And, you know, people are always very complimentary and which is nice to hear because I know how hard they've worked at. And, it's rewarding and gratifying to see that, you know, finally pay off because they've been on the other end of it, you know, twice.
Nice.
I would say this end is much better. Not only as a parent, makes that ride home a lot shorter, I'll tell you that. And it's, you know, even on the way home, I mean, there were the four of us going back together, Linda and I and Anthony and Brant, and, you know, we finally get to Minneapolis. We just got this 1 hour plane ride and we're done, right? And, the flight's canceled. It seems like those late night flights always get canceled on the weekend. This is not very many people at the gate. You know, the weather was so-so, but anyway. So we didn't even mind that. We said, okay, let's just go rent the car and go. If we had lost, it really would have sucked. But you know, it just makes everything better, I guess. It's just, like I said, gratifying and rewarding, and you're really happy for the girls because you know how hard they've worked, too. Just for that one opportunity, you know? Who does that? Who puts that much effort into something that they only get one crack at every 4 years?
It's different. It's not like every year with the Stanley Cup you get a shot. You're going to see what's going to happen. It's all that work once every 4 years, and this is their – this is that was their third Olympics. Wow. Had anything since that game and since becoming Olympic gold medalist? And has there been anything that surprised you since then?
In what regard, Mike?
In any regard. Anything about the fanfare? Anything about the way people react? Anything just strike you as, geez, that's either interesting or that's odd or anything strike you since it's happened?
No, nothing odd. I mean, people are very complimentary and I mean, pretty much every job site I'm on, you know, some people know me, some don't. But I'm working up here in Hankins in North Dakota, and the president of the bank, Bob Worley's, hey, congratulations. And there's various people at the bank that, you know, know me or know of me, or know, we're actually not so much me, but the girls and figure out that I'm the dad and they're complimentary. And so that's nice. You know, it's nice to know that people are paying attention, I guess. And I've had a lot of people, you know, say, hey, they represent the state very well. And that's always good to hear. You know, when it's all said and done, you know, they're good hockey players, but I think most of all, it's more important to me that just they're good people. And I think that's what people will remember in the long run.
Final question about parenting. At the end of the day, is there anything that you can do other than be a supportive parent to help your kid achieve high-level goals?
They got to do it because they want to do it. Yeah, you know, sometimes we push them along and we try and provide them with the opportunities to, you know, to succeed, but they're the ones that have to do it. And you can be supportive and you can be encouraging and you can be, you know, critical at times and you can offer your advice and all that kind of stuff, but they're the ones that really have to want to do it. And I think if they want to do it bad enough, they'll find their way, and they'll just got to provide them with the opportunities, and let the coaches coach. You know, it's I hear too many stories where, you know, parents getting coaches' ears and stuff like that, and you know, you got to let the coaches do their job, and you know, I got some really good advice from a guy once. It was Brian Burke, and so he was the general manager for I think Anaheim Ducks when they won the Cup.
You bet.
I think that's it. Yep. I don't follow hockey religiously and what have you.
He's been around the National He's been around the National Hockey League a time or two. Brian Burke.
Yeah, so we were at an event together, and he was one of the guest speakers, and I was listening to his story, and he was talking about, he was complaining about not getting enough ice time and what have you, and he was complaining to his dad and what have you, and his dad said, you know what, Brian, you want to play more? Yeah, Dad, I want to play more. Then play better. That's pretty much it, so.
My dad, you know what?
Go to work and get better.
Those are the exact same words that my dad told me playing CYO basketball. He never saw me play baseball because he was gone. I told that story yesterday. Funny, right? And so it was kind of a big deal, my dad, and you know, in Major League Baseball, and so I'm playing
Catholic Youth League basketball. So I'm in high school, but I don't play for the high school basketball team. So, you know, everybody's church has a basketball team. So I played for my church team. It's all high school guys, and we were pretty good. So I was irritated. And because he comes to see me play, and I sit half the game. And so, and my coach is my best friend's dad, who's like a second, he's like a third dad to me in my life, Ron Leinberger. And so I go home, and I'm pissed. And he looks at me and goes, hey, you want to play more? And we're in the kitchen of our house. I said, yeah. And he looks at me and goes, play better. I said, what? What about the coach is an idiot or something like that? Throw me a bone here. And he was having none of it. He said, no, he wants to win. He's playing the best guys. He doesn't think you're one of them. So you got to figure out what he wants you to do, and you need to do it. Play better.
Well, you know, I just thought of a story. You know, so at Thanksgiving,
the
girls weren't even what?
What the hell kind of advice is that? Play better. That's not what parents do.
Oh, well, hey, it's good advice is what it is. So.
It was great advice, actually.
So at Thanksgiving, the girls come back, and they're not even sure they're going to be on this team. You know, the team had been selected, and they were selected on it. And then at Thanksgiving, they brought in three players at the end. So now everything was kind of up in the air again. And you know, they just weren't sure they were going to make it. They had, were at the Four Nations Cup, didn't play a single game, and which was four games didn't play. They had been healthy scratches in other games.
And this is this last year.
Wow. This is, yeah, leading up to the Olympics in South Korea. And so, I mean, they came home and they're like, we're not even sure we're going to be on this team. And I'm thinking to myself, geez, I'm glad I got insurance on those airline tickets. you know, stuff like that. And, so the coach had a meeting with them and, I think this might have been after Thanksgiving. I don't really have my dates down very well, but they had a meeting with the girls and said, look, if you guys make this team, you're most likely going to be our fourth liners. And their attitude was, okay, well, then we'll be the best fourth liners in the world. And I remember them saying to me, Dad, I'll guarantee you Canada will not be playing their fourth line against us. And the rest is history. But I remember that what the girl said exactly, verbatim. So it's kind of like, you know, advice to parents. Yeah, maybe you're not on the power play. Maybe you're not on the penalty kill. You know, maybe you're third, fourth liner. Maybe you're not seeing as much ice time as you think you deserve. But take the ice time you're getting and make the best of it. Do the best you can with it, and you'll earn more. I mean, people that watch would know, but the girls didn't play in the power play at all. I think she had one opportunity on the power play. And Jocelyn scored on it. But other than that, you know, they weren't chosen to do any specialty team stuff. I don't know why, but they accepted their role and went and did the best they can with it. So I guess that's advice I would give to parents that have kids in sports. You gotta earn it. And I'll use another example. Here's Mario. You know, Mario was never a grinder, hard worker guy. He's not a gifted guy. You know, I mean, in the sense that, you know, a stick handling wizard or anything like that. He's a grinder. He's got a score from about, you know, five inches in front of the crease. That's where he goals, you know, not much further. So, but, you know, that's where he's going to score. But, you know, he's always been kind of a third, fourth line player. It doesn't seem to matter what team he goes to, even now. He's playing professional hockey in Austria, and, you know, he always seems to start out in the third line and usually ends up on the first. But, you know, he's got to prove himself, you know, seems like every year, every team he goes to. But, you know, you show up early for practice, you stay late, you do your stuff in the weight room. You just do all that extra stuff, and eventually, you know, you just keep working harder and harder, and you know, hopefully your opportunities come, and when they come, you know, try and make the best of it.
Sounds like old-fashioned advice, hard work, being a good teammate, discipline, and then
you hit the nail right on the head, Mike, being a good teammate. You can't be in there sulking. You know, if things aren't going your way, you're not playing with the people you think you should be playing with, and you're not getting the ice time. Nobody wants to sit and listen to people bitch. You know, that's the worst thing. It just has a negative effect on everyone around you. And you don't want to be that guy or girl. You know, just suck it up.
So the bottom line, though, is you're using sports to create a good human being. And then hopefully, you know, and you know, I mean, there's so many different factors that go into whether you ultimately play it at that high of a level. But as a parent, what that sport should contribute to your child's development are those things. He or she is a good teammate. He or she doesn't bitch. They might bitch in private to you on the way home, or I'm really frustrated. But when they're part of that team, there's something bigger they're a part of, and they realize that, and they get all that. And those, in my opinion, those are always the great things that team sports teach, and the life lessons they teach. And obviously, those things were manifest in the roles you're both, Monique and Jocelyn, had. When the women's hockey team, the women's national team, took on USA Hockey, and you didn't hear, you know, any of those girls, you know, lipping off or making stupid statements. They were all very disciplined. They had certain spokespeople, but you don't learn that in a week from somebody kind of explaining it to you. You either get raised like that, and those different lessons you learn along the way as you grow up contribute to that. And those themes of being a teammate, being a good person, being a hard worker, and being disciplined, to me, those are the great things that team sports can give people. I mean, I certainly got that out of team sports. I think you did as well. And I think all of our kids have got out of it well. You know, I'll tell you a quick story. Colleen got asked to try out for the swim team. Now, Colleen's not that good of a swimmer, to be honest with you. But I think the swim team needed kids. So she's playing volleyball, and the swim coach says, hey, why don't you come out and, you know, and swim on the beginning swim team? So she says, what do you think? I said, well, try it. You know, it's good. Play another sport.
Yep.
So she does. And I told her, I said, let me tell you what I never ran track, and I didn't swim, although I'm a great swimmer. But I said, I am. I am a good swimmer. The when I learned about track,
you had to be. You're in the Marines.
Well, I didn't even know I was going to be a Marine when I was learning how to swim. But my oldest, John, he went out for track in high school at Red River High School, and he was a pole vaulter. And I remember waiting for him after the meet, and I'd never been around track in my life too much, other than, you know, when I was in high school playing baseball and the track team was out there, but I liked the way, at the end of it, you know, they got the coaches together, and the head track coach is a great guy named Bob Zimney, and he, you know, they went through, hey, here's everybody who had a personal best. So what didn't matter necessarily was who got first, second, third, or fourth. That was okay in the team meet and all that, but, you know, Lamoureux, he just vaulted, you know, 13 feet, you know, 6 inches. You know, he's never vaulted above 13 feet in his life, you know, and the whole team congratulated him. And it was ultimately about the hard work and effort that you put in to every day go out there and try to be better. And I thought that was something very cool about, you know, individual sports, that there is that element there that you don't really have in team sports, where you win and lose kind of as a team. And really, if you don't win or lose, it doesn't really matter that much what you did individually, although it does. Your coaches see that, but you don't kind of get recognized like that. And I think that's awesome, because it helps build quality young people, because you're teaching them hard work and effort and being a supportive teammate and being a good person. And that's what sports ultimately, contribute to the development of people. If you don't wind up playing it professionally, that then it can contribute to you financially. Yeah. But for the rest of it, it's how it contributes to the development, especially of young people, into becoming better human beings. And I think sports can do that, and it certainly has done it for a lot of people, myself included.
Well, I think the lessons learned from sports, I mean, you said it already, just the life lessons from playing sports, whether it be team or individual. I mean, I don't think there's a better way to learn those lessons.
I agree.
For us, I mean, you know, you get the victories, you know, it's gracious in victory, gracious in defeat, you know, stuff like that, just being in control of yourself and you know, and sometimes you don't want to be, you know, sometimes you want to lash out and do something stupid, but, you know, you got to be accountable to your team. Yeah, there's just so many lessons in sports that it's good for life, I think.
No.
You know, Linda had the kids in the individual sports. I mean, she was had the swimming background, and the kids were all in that. They loved swimming. No, they didn't. But they all did it for a while. So, actually, they weren't bad either. So, it did okay, but eventually hockey went out. But, you know, individual sports are something you can't depend on anybody else. It's you.
Right.
No, and only you.
Right.
And so.
Right. There's nobody that's going to set a pick or nobody that's going to pass anything to you. It's just you. And so.
It's just you.
Anyway. My guest, very graciously, Pierre Lamoureux. He is the father of two Olympic gold winning women's ice hockey players, Monique Lamoureux and Jocelyn Lamoureux. And Monique Lamoureux-Morando and Jocelyn Lamoureux-Davidson, as they are now both married. So, first of all, Pierre, congratulations. Thank you for sharing your thoughts on a road that not too many people travel with their kids. A lot of us are involved in sports, but not too many to the level that you've gone to with your kids. So, congratulations on raising great kids. Congratulations on having two great daughters. And, oh, by the way, they happen to be gold medalists, so congratulations on all of that.
Thanks very much, Mike. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. That is Pierre Lamoureux, more of All Marine Radio, coming up next right here on the All Warrior Radio Network.
The Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt. Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner. Proven and dependable.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
That'll do it on a Wednesday. My thanks to Pierre Lamoureux for coming on. Talking parenting, talking development, developing young people using sports. He's a good dude. And he's a great friend. And it's real interesting. I want to say at about the hour and 2 minute mark, he says something that is pretty cool. That, look, you know, it's great that they've won Olympic gold medal because they've obviously worked so hard, but it's better, you know, as a father, it's better that they're good people. So at the end of the day, I think all the things that our kids do contribute, hopefully, to them becoming better people. And that good people that help other people, that know the difference between right and wrong. And so, as I said, you know, I think, you know, winning a gold medal, great. Arguably their greatest achievement has come off the ice in their gender equity fight with USA Hockey. But I think that's a little bit easier to say after you've won a gold medal. So, anyway, my thanks to Pierre for coming on and talking parenting and what it's like to, you know, to, as he said, you know, those girls didn't know if they would be on that team last Thanksgiving when they came home. You know, the way the team was setting up, and they weren't sure that they would be included. You know, and so he said a few things in there that, you know, it might not be in the NHL. It might be a couple of rungs down, but work hard and be a star where you are. And if on a team this is your role, then be the best at that. That's the only way to open up other doors. So if your line is your role on a team is, you know, to play against left-handed pitchers, then, you know, then play against left-handed pitchers and crush it. Do the best you can do. And by crushing it and doing the best and being a great teammate, guess what? Other doors will open up. If that's meant to be. So, very cool stuff. All right. Thanks for listening today. We're going to talk about reunions again tomorrow. We had James Ferguson on a couple weeks ago, about probably 3 weeks or a month ago, and talked about his career and the nonprofit organization he set up. That what they do is they run reunions. Yeah. So there's good things to do throughout the course of the weekend. It's not a drunk fest, because those don't turn out well most of the time. So he'll join us tomorrow. We'll talk about that. So have a great afternoon on a Wednesday. All Marine Radio repeats itself right now, so don't touch that dial. Have a great one. We will see you tomorrow on a Wednesday. All Marine Radio, out.